welcome to the Young Turks every day. I was going to say every day. Yeah, you're also welcome every day. Also, everybody, welcome to the show whenever you're watching, whatever day that is.
You're not welcome on Tuesdays.
No, that's the least welcoming of days. We're good on Thursdays, though. I'm John Arola, probably. Maybe I'll mess that up. And I'm joined by J.R. Jackson.
Middle seat.
We let him on the show from time to time, but only in the middle seat.
Well, he actually, tonight, he made a nice concession to me. Because they wanted me in the middle seat. And I said, hey, I hate the middle seat. And then, of course, we all hate the middle seat.
Yeah, that's some trivia. Nobody likes sitting in the middle. So every time you see someone there, they're either the nice person at the table or the one we respect least.
Or.
One of the two.
Or.
But JR was angelic in taking the middle seat.
That was very nice of
you.
And Mark Thompson on the show again, twice in 1 week. Always nice to
see.
Very
cool.
And we have got some big stories for you today. Obviously, I think you can guess what the lead story will be. But we have updates on Donald Trump's Asian vacation. We also have some more stuff coming out of the Paradise Papers, supplemented by some great work by TYT Investigates, and an idea of what the Senate might end up doing when it comes to their tax plan. So all of that will be coming up over the course of the next hour, but we will of course be starting off with Roy Moore. Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore was an embarrassment for the GOP since he won the primary, somewhat surprisingly. And all of that was before it was revealed that he apparently had a number of relationships with underage girls back in the late 70s and early 80s. And that has caused a number of prominent Republicans to denounce Moore, or sort of denounce him while leaving a lot of wiggle room, or quickly walk away from the person asking the question. So that you add all that up and it's a bad situation for the GOP. But we want to give you the details of what was revealed by the Washington Post today. So it turns out that back when he was a judge, there was a 14-year-old girl, Leigh Korfman, that was sitting outside of her mother, outside of a courthouse, because a custody hearing was going on, which is great context for this. He approaches the mom and the daughter and says that the mom can go inside to deal with the legal stuff and he will stay outside with the child, which is very nice of him. Unfortunately, he had an ulterior motive. Alone with Leigh, Moore chatted her up and asked for her phone number. Days later, he picked her up around the corner from her house, drove her around 30. I noticed that she was around the corner from her house, not at her house. That's interesting that's how he set that up. Drove her about 30 minutes to his home in the woods, told her how pretty she was and kissed her. On a second visit, she says, he took off her shirt and pants and removed his clothes. He touched her over her bra and underpants, she says, and guided her hand to touch him over his underwear. She was quoted by the Washington Post as saying, I wanted it over with, I wanted out. Please just get this over with. Whatever this is, just get it over. And so she asked to be taken home and he took her home at that point. Now, two of her childhood friends say that she told them back at the time that she was seeing an older man. One says that at the time she identified him as Moore. So this is not, you know, just looking back 30 plus years. She had been talking to people about this, including to her mother, inside of 10 years of it happening. Now, there are three other women interviewed by the Post that say that Moore pursued them when they were between the ages of 16 and 18. Wendy Miller says she was 14 and working as a Santa's helper at a mall. That's just terrible. When Moore first approached her, thankfully he waited 2 years before he started asking her out on dates. And there was another 17-year-old they spoke to in her high school. So he knew exactly how old she was because she was still in high school at that point. Understand that he was in his 30s when all of these situations were going on. Now, with those two women, apparently it didn't go beyond kissing. But there was an 18-year-old cheerleader that says that Moore took her out on dates that included bottles of wine when she was not of legal age to drink the wine. And so this adds up to a problem for him because there apparently is a pattern of behavior where he was targeting women as young as 14 for dates.
Yeah, cruising malls and high schools.
Malls and high schools looking for people working with Santas. That's a pretty dark situation. Now, he did respond, his campaign responds, saying these allegations are completely false and are a desperate political attack by the National Democrat Party and the Washington Post on this campaign. I don't know about all of the women, but Korfman, the 14-year-old in the story, says that she has voted for the Republican in the last three presidential elections. She voted for Donald Trump. And apparently none of the women have been involved in any way in terms of donations or anything with this race. So the idea that they are just hacks trying to help the campaign is not just offensive in the normal way that these sorts of allegations are, but it's also unfounded in any way. She's a Donald Trump supporter that he apparently tried to seduce while she was 14 years old.
It's weird how sexual, we've talked a lot lately about harassers, abusers, in this case potential pedophiles, they don't really fall within one party or another. And their victims don't always fall within one party or another. I'm sure when he was cruising the malls and the high schools back in the 70s, he wasn't going, oh, is this person gonna be a future Republican before I harass and maybe try to seduce her and handle. I mean, there was the 18-year-old that they gave wine to. I'm not sure if that went to every one of his targets. But so it's a shame that you even have to say, hey, so just to point out, you guys, this victim of this pedophile, this potential pedophile, voted for Trump, didn't care about all the things that was coming out about him during the election, has voted for Republicans in the past, so that the attack on her won't be, oh, look at this, just a lying dim. That's all they're ever doing, trying to get us and take us down.
Yeah.
It happens to from people of any political stripe. And of people that two people that alienated.
Yeah, and that obviously that was to refute his general argument, which was that it's politically motivated. And of course, he kept just throwing that up. It's politically motivated, and that's going to be the size that fits all on this issue. It's interesting also to see some in the GOP pulling away from him, but some defending him. And I was seeing something from the state auditor there, and quoting Bible and saying that even with Joseph and Mary, Mary was a teenager and Joseph was an adult. I'm thinking,
oh my God.
Wow. I mean, that's a tortured kind of defense for this. I mean,
we never know that. As stupid as an example as that is, I don't know a lot about the Bible, but they didn't even sleep together. That was the whole point of that story, you moron. Again, the atheist has to remind the Christian of how this thing plays out.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. I love that Roy Moore is today spotlight in the news, perverted Alabama politician. And this state auditor is hold my beer. I think I can beat him.
Right. No, exactly. No, it's a look, there's no defense. This may stick. Particularly when you see so many of the GOP melting away from him right now.
Yeah. So we actually have a little bit of that here in this compilation that JR put together. You're going to see Richard Shelby and Jeff Flake responding to questions about these new allegations.
If there is any shred of truth to these stories, he ought to step aside. And now.
Is he fit? Would he be fit to serve in the Senate if this was true?
No. If there's any shred of truth, he ought to step aside. I mean, just with regard to Roy Moore, those stories are appalling, just appalling.
It's a devastating, nasty story. If the revelations, if that's true, I don't believe there'd be any place for him in the U.S. Senate. Okay?
So in addition to them, you also have Mitch McConnell calling him to step down if it's true. So again, leaving themselves some wiggle room there. But John McCain said the allegations against Roy Moore are deeply disturbing and disqualifying. He should immediately step down and allow the people of Alabama to elect a candidate they can be proud of. So John McCain, perhaps the least sort of hedging his bets out of all of them.
Yeah, this kind of lends to what I was thinking when I saw the immediate refusal or rebuttal of him, which doesn't happen a lot, which is why it was a little bit surprising. So Richard Shelby, after he said the first parts of there, a follow-up question said, so do you think he should carry on and maybe go on and serve if he wins? And he said, well, you know who I supported in the primary. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this guy. I think Luther Strange.
Sure.
The point being, they didn't. The guys that didn't want him because of his other political leanings, they know how much of how many racist things he said. He backed the whole birtherism thing and his homophobia behavior. So all that they already know about, know how hard it's going to be to have this guy around. He's crazy.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, let's hurry up and say, let's get him out for this reason because we didn't want him for the other reasons we'd have to defend him for that weren't particularly illegal, just deplorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, and again, it's good to see them actually coming out against him for the most part. And again, I'm going to have one or two that are pretty bad of people defending him. But they are coming out against him. But in the wake of the Access Hollywood tape, some prominent Republicans denounced Trump and now enthusiastically work to advance his agenda every single day. So these sorts of denunciations only go so far.
It is weird, by the way, Johnny, that politics is that one space that sort of you don't know which way it's going to fall. I mean, you know, show business, everybody's pulling movies and reshooting films, and guys are losing their jobs and are closing down studios and declaring bankruptcy at the first whiff of sexual harassment, and certainly these rape allegations as well. But here, as you mentioned, the Access Hollywood tape, we end up with the President of the United States. You know, it just, you're not sure how much will stick. I think JR makes a great point when he talks about the fact that it may be the extremism here in Roy Moore that will, that is, he hasn't made a lot of friends along the way that may hurt him also.
Yeah, maybe. And I noticed one of the first things that came out about this, I think they actually tried to beat the Washington Post to publishing this. Somebody tipped them off, but Breitbart put an article as a part of several articles about that this is a hit job, basically. And they defended his relationships with most of the women, saying he's just being romantic and stuff like that. There's nothing immoral about, you know, habitually trying to date people who are 47% as old as you. Now they
I love that you did the percentage. That's quite impressive.
I'm probably wrong. And then they got to the section with the 14-year-old, and they didn't even comment on that. They just linked to the Post section on it and then moved on to other stuff. And so
The 14-year-old is indefensible.
It's indefensible. Yeah. And so this is the outlet that pushed the Pizzagate conspiracy, amongst others, was so concerned about pedophilia in Washington, now working, getting out as fast as they can to run interference for a guy who apparently was a serial pedophile back in the 70s.
So the reason that they think this is all politically motivated is because this is a card that they play a lot of times.
Yeah.
Let's just go ahead and bash anyone by any way we can, something completely embarrassing or even something that most people actually accept or other people have done in normal relationship situations. Yeah. But let's just put that stuff out there and maybe destroy them. So when it's something that's actually really bad, they say they're out to destroy me. Everybody's out to get me. No one has been treated, I think this was this particular one, no one has been treated as badly as Roy Moore has. No politician in history, except your boy, the president, said the same thing already.
Exactly, yeah. At some point, there's only one who's treated worse than everyone else. Actually, could you get ready to jump ahead to graphic 14? I want to turn to another angle on this. Obviously, Roy Moore in a lot of trouble because of what he has alleged to have done. But it's interesting, we're talking about projection here. This is a guy known for taking extreme hard lines on religious issues. He's an Islamophobe, saying that people who are Muslim shouldn't be allowed to serve, homophobe and stuff like that. And then he has this dark past when it comes to his dating history. And so JR found this video of him back in 2005 talking about homosexuality. With what you know now about his behavior, let's listen.
Is it moral? It is defined by the law as detestable. It was against the law in most states. We get our morality from the Holy Bible upon which this nation was founded. Just because it's done behind closed doors, it can still be prohibited by state law.
Yes, they get it from the Bible for what that's worth. Also back in the 90s, understand this, and this is getting even closer to his sort of behavior. In the 90s, he ruled in a divorce case that a woman who had a lesbian affair couldn't visit her children unsupervised or with her partner, writing that, quote, minor children will be detrimentally affected by the present lifestyle of the mother, also the judge. Moore was the only vote in favor of a daycare worker who raped a 12-year-old, claiming that there was no, quote, implied threat of serious physical injury. So this guy has a history of taking odd lines on abuse of children.
It's just, it's so obscene. Oh my, it's so despicable. He's so deplorable. He's an awful guy. It's great that you're reviewing this. He is a disgusting person.
He said this about homosexuality: the effect of such a lifestyle upon children must not be ignored, and the lifestyle should never be tolerated, because we have to watch out for the children and keep them pure and innocent until they hit 14, in which case I'm gonna try to take them to a cafe or something.
Again, like you said, from the very beginning, the first victim we talked about, Lee Korfman, she was 14, sitting outside, and he said, let's let your mother go in so I can be here alone with you. So, you can see where he gets his mindset of what he thinks actual sexual predators are like, because they're lesbian, or at their present lesbian exercises at the time. So she can't be left alone with her own child, but they can leave your ass alone with someone else's child.
Yeah, and so there's one other tweet I wanted to read for you. So we talked about some of the politicians on the Republican side, Senate, generally in the Senate. that are coming out against Moore now, at least. We'll see what happens if he goes on to win the election. But a journalist, Daniel Dale, has been communicating with a county chairman for the Republican Party in Alabama to see what they think. He talked with Alabama Bibb County Republican Chairman Jerry Powell. This is Graphic 17. Jerry Powell told him that he'd vote for Roy Moore even if he did commit a sex crime against a girl, saying, "I would vote for him because I wouldn't want to vote for Doug. I'm not saying I support what he did.
Just saying,
if you want to hand him government authority and power after knowing the person he is, you are supporting what he did and what he is. Because everything that he's been since then should have given us pretty strong hints of the sort of lifestyle he was leading himself."
I'm telling you, man, you're gonna get tired of hearing this analogy, and you probably already are tired of hearing it. Man, if you're a Cowboys fan and then your favorite player is up on some kind of charge, you'd be like, "Well, I don't care, just let him finish the season because I'd like to win this. Yeah. This is just my fantasy team and I've got bets." So they don't actually care about the actions and activities of their favorite players. They actually just want to win and say, "See, we won." I just don't want to vote for Doug. I just don't want to see the Packers win. That's all. I just don't want to see it. So please let my guy play.
And you see that played out at every level of government. We've seen it play out at every level of election. And we've seen the demonization of the other side to the point that, yeah, you begin to go, no, I just don't want anything. I just don't want that other side.
Yeah.
That works both ways, by the way. I understand on our team, too. But I think we call out fact. We're prone to that, to calling out fact, I think, more quickly than is the GOP.
Yeah, yeah. And so let's talk about winning, because it doesn't look like he's going to step down. My guess is that he won't unless his pressure continues, which, you know, with the meat of the way it is, nothing continues for more than 24 hours or so. And even if they tried to take him off, they'd be in a bit of a bind, because that election to replace Jeff Sessions, his seat in the Senate, is on December 12th. And according to their constitution, you can't be taken off the ballot within 76 days of an election. So unless they break the rules, and this has happened before, that name is going to be on there no matter what. We'll see how the people of Alabama respond. Now, he's been leading by about 9 points in most of the polls for the past month or so. Trying to sleep with a 14-year-old, is that worth 9 points? I don't know in 2017 in America. But perhaps, and if a Democrat were to take that seat, which nobody expected, that would bring the Senate to 51-49, making it that much more difficult for Republicans to pass, you know, some of their priorities over the next few years. And although there would still be very little chance of the Democrats taking the Senate in 2018, it does bring it a little bit closer to the realm of possibility.
John, it's good that I work with you most days and I'm sitting next to you now, because your positive energy is like, it's helpful, but it's not gonna happen.
What's not gonna happen?
This guy's gonna win easily. His lead's gonna increase. I'm gonna make really bad predictions.
I'm just laying out,
he's gonna win by 10
roads
to 11 points instead of the 9.
You think he's gonna gain points?
He's gonna gain points because
the witch hunt that's underway on him. Is that what you're saying?
It's gonna be look at the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
They're trying to attack our boy. Oh no, I really want to stick it to them and let them know that I'm so stupid. I'm willing. Look at the quote. I don't know who that guy was. If he did commit these acts, it's okay, it's great, man. I want to support him just so I can say, yeah. That's the only reason.
You know, it's your fantasy football sports team analogy. It really is. But John's scenario, who needs House of Cards when you've got that? I mean, that's the idea that this 11th hour fact could change an election and that a Democrat could actually win this seat. Wow.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately I side with JR. I think they sort of the ends justify the means, or whoever they want to, you know, do the jujitsu mentally on it.
Yeah, and look, I know we've been saying they seem that the willingness of some Republicans to denounce him is, as JR said, an indication of how uncomfortable that some of them are, at least publicly, with him, you know, regardless of what they believe privately. But this guy, you know, getting into office isn't just one more number making votes more difficult for the other side. Imagine what this guy can do with the higher profile he'll have. He'll be serving on committees. He'll be introducing legislation. He'll be at confirmation hearings. He will be helping to advise in the choice of Supreme Court justices and things like that. This is a terrible, terrible guy. Even in a political environment infested with some truly disgusting creatures, this guy stands out and has stood out for decades. Long before there was Trumpism, there was Moreism, and it was disgusting. Apparently, it was disgusting all the way back to the late 70s. And if this guy gets into the Senate, that will be just another really dark mark on our country.
That's a great point. It's really with an extreme agenda of the sort that he has pursued decade after decade. We've detailed it here for you. I mean, the homophobia, yeah. The racism, the birther thing, which he always insisted upon. Even, yeah. You know, it's, well, I still don't believe that Barack Obama, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Barack Obama is not an American.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of pig-headedness that, and that does disrespects pigs that are better headed than that, so I apologize. But you get my point. Yeah, he can pursue a despicable agenda.
Exactly. Exactly. Mark Thompson, noted pig defender. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. What's up?
In more ways than one.
Exactly.
He stands up for animals.
He does, and we need to. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, what has Donald Trump been up to in China now? We're going to try to find out. We'll see if we have any success after this. Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. Mark and JR and John. I got some tweets I want to read of yours. Bill Wetzel tweeted in basically what we're all feeling in this country today. Oh, Roy Moore, gross, just gross. And many in Alabama will say, oh, Roy Moore, gross, just gross, and write his name on a piece of paper and put it in a box. Riley Grady says GOP has already proved they'll elect pervs. That's true as well. Joy said, Roy Moore is calling her a liar? This from the dude who called Native Americans and Asian Americans reds and yellows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ugh. And that guy is gonna be on select committees and yeah. Wow, that is disgusting.
He's such a piece of S.
I don't really want to read this, but it's on the list. Ugh. Joshua Olson says, Jer Jackson on the main panel. Yes! Such a good power panel on a Thursday. John and Mark too. It's like an early Christmas present.
Oh.
I like all the tweets that are like, JR! Also John and Mark.
JR does you, have a more vibrant following than we do.
You got to come on less.
That's true, yeah.
I've been trying. Build it up, right? I know it, right?
I went to the Arctic just so that I would like recede in the shadows. I could come back triumphant. And everybody's yeah. like, where's oh, he's back.
Where's the parade?
If you'd exactly. kept the beard, you would exactly. have had a chance.
That's not going to happen. Okay, let's jump back into the news. So Donald Trump is in China, and particularly because of his long history and recent history of saying extremely inflammatory things about China, its economy, and the fact that it was the place where they came up with the hoax for climate change, you might think that during this trip we would have a fiery press conference where they would ask him hard questions about China. But that is not going to happen. Caitlin Collins tweeted from a conversation with Sarah Sanders about this. Sarah Huckabee Sanders asked why he didn't take questions from reporters today. Sarah Sanders said it was at the Chinese insistence there were no questions today. And so theoretically, it would be nice, as he has had in all of those other countries, that he and the foreign leader would come together and be asked questions from the media of the US and the host country. But they don't want to do that because it's China and they have at best an extremely tense relationship with press, free or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you push them to have a free press present at the meeting, it's not going to happen. And we know this because in the past it has happened. Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush insisted on taking questions from reporters at their respective press conferences in this same situation. When President Barack Obama visited China back in 2014, Xi, under duress, took one lone question from a member of the press belonging to a Chinese state newspaper. But at least in that case, Barack Obama was there to answer questions as well. Jay Carney, former press secretary, said, I once had to tell Chinese officials that President Obama would not show up for the press avail unless there would be a Q&A, and they backed down. And they did that because we put forward some strength and insisted that they do it. Trump didn't do that. This is the guy who said, you know, he's the one who's going to get them to respect us again. He's going to go abroad and be strong. and he just folds, you know, like a flan. And so we don't have any questions. And so, you know, it would be nice for the Chinese media to be able to ask him questions. Maybe our reporters would be able to finally get some answers out of the leadership of China as well.
What's the question? Do you think the Chinese president didn't want to hear from anyone? They said particularly they have an issue with foreign media. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, there's something that they may
questions
ask.
About human rights, questions about, you know, some of their economic development strategies.
Well, people like, did you two talk about the 15 to 20 different rallies that the U.S. president conducted during the entire campaign, where he said, "You're money manipulators. You made up global warming. You're stealing from us. I'm gonna come and I'm gonna kick some ass." Did he kick your ass back in the meeting?
Well, we actually. Like, why don't we go to the video, because we've got an interesting new spin on that strategy. A video that was found by this guy, JR. Let's take a look at that.
Both the United States and China will have a more prosperous future if we can achieve a level economic playing field. Right now, unfortunately, it is a very one-sided and unfair one. But I don't blame China. After all, who can blame a country for being able to take advantage of another country for the benefit of its citizens? I give China great credit.
Everyone who was in that
he read
meeting,
that off a piece of paper.
Everyone was in that meeting was like, is he talking about right now? Because we just totally took advantage of him right before he came back out here.
Exactly.
And statements.
By the way, so he's reading this, again, they don't like teleprompters, so he's reading off a piece of paper. How did they write the name of the country for him to pronounce it? China. and so look, I guess this is sort of being more diplomatic, aside from the whole the media thing.
This qualifies as high diplomacy for him.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and just to go back to your first point, I think they're all too happy, the White House, that the restrictions on the press are what they are in China, so that they don't have to have their guy out there riffing with some question that is asked in a press conference, even in a controlled media situation. But yeah, this is big diplomacy for Donald Trump, that he turned down the heat a little bit. In fact, you know, he was much tougher on the Japanese, really, than he was on the Chinese.
Yeah. And look, we can all think of a lot of really uncomfortable questions they could have asked. They could have asked him. So, do you still believe that guy over there invented climate change? That would be an interesting thing for him to respond to. The currency manipulation, mm-hmm. what they would do if China didn't stop manipulating its currency. How are your factories making your ties and suit jackets? How are they doing? They're down the street. There would be a lot of really interesting questions.
I can see who's not going to be invited into the press pool.
No, probably not.
So the question becomes, is he weak and he bowed down to a foreign leader? Like
I
they
think
always
he didn't
said
want it.
That Obama always did? Or is it they talked backstage and said, you know what, this is a good chance for me not to speak to the media because I don't like doing it either. Because we know how Trump is. I read a story from February about how the Chinese president who came in late in 2012, he has, of course, the state media, and he looks for loyalty. I'm reading a couple pieces, and I just want you to think about how this is comparable to where our president is. There was photographs from this particular state-run media. Photographs showed fawning journalists crowding around Mr. Xi, who sat in the anchor's desk on the state television network. Does that look like a network Trump was on? With fawning journalists that
did
go,
he have
oh, thank you, Mr. President.
With him?
Hannity. The Chinese news media, it also exists to serve as a propaganda tool for the Communist Party, and it must pledge its fealty to Mr. Xi. It also said that there's he looks for particular loyalty for military leaders and other important figures since the whole last year.
Yeah.
So the point being, he needs loyalty. Who's all about loyalty? Mm-hmm. He needs a media that makes sure they tell the good stories about what's happening. That's also in this article. I was like, man, this isn't even like a mistake. I thought maybe they were like, oh, we don't know the history of them trying to force this lack of media communication. And maybe they're just stupid. They probably sat back and talked and said, you know, we both have the same agenda here, or at least we want to get to the same endpoint of not answering any questions. This is great. Yeah. We're getting along perfectly. Who knew that we're exactly the same?
They don't even need to have that conversation, of course. You just know that that's going to proceed. But I was struck by the same thing, that Donald Trump has to be looking at Xi and going, you know, this is the guy and the setup that I want. right? He's got a media that he completely controls. He is baked into the system now, so he controls everything. I mean, it's an authoritarian regime. And honestly, I mean, it's a kingdom. And that's what Donald Trump wanted.
Yeah.
So I think this China thing, he just looks over at Xi and it's like a wet dream. He's you know, he wishes he were here.
Yeah, he's like, he wishes he were
the Chinese premier. Yeah. Yeah.
And look at back domestically, we've got that situation with the Justice Department pressuring AT&T and Time Warner that if they're going to be able to do their merger, they have to sell off a random company, CNN,
right.
Which is fake news, to be fair.
That's right. I don't know. We need you to sell something like CNN, right?
Just sell CNN.
All of a sudden, this administration, which cares nothing about this sort of thing, it's a free market after all. I mean, mergers are happening all the time.
Yeah.
That should be, you know. Anyway, we get to that story, but
exactly.
But yes, that he wants his version of what the Chinese president has.
Yeah. Now, we also have heard reports that there's a series of agreements that they've come to that are supposed to amount to $250 billion of increased economic activity between the two countries. If that actually happens, that's probably great for both countries. That sounds good. But we also heard that Carrier wasn't going to ship a bunch of their jobs abroad. And we just found out again today that they're shipping hundreds more. And so we've heard these things before. So we have to, you know, give it some time, see if it actually happens. But one random thing that, just to close this out, that Trump could have done perhaps is in this particular country, in China, obviously there's a lot of freedoms that we enjoy they do not have. And one of the things they don't have is the same sort of access to a lot of forms of social media that there are crackdowns on and all of that. And then Twitter is certainly one of those in China. For a guy, a president who spends 22% of his day on Twitter, he could push on that topic, perhaps. Think about all the followers you could get, Donald, if you just had the entirety of the population of China suddenly signing on.
Now, see, I don't know if that's what's the degree of him of this story, but they said he had some kind of technology that was allowed to tweet while he's there.
Yeah, so, he can, but why did you need that
technology?
That's
the kind of person he is. He's like, as long as I get it, shit about anybody
else. Yeah, that is probably true.
Look, there's no aspect of this trip that's really designed to push back on China in any way. He wanted to get concessions to China, or at least begin something with China on Korea. That was bizarre because, as you know, they say, well, hey, we're already on it. Believe me, we're committed to the denuclearization of North Korea. And then he wanted something on trade. He wanted to make those remarks, which we've just heard. And they were a back massage compared to what he did to the Japanese. And yet we have a much bigger trade deficit with the Chinese than we did the Japanese. So it made no sense. I think, is just moving through the situation, is just trying to photo op it, in essence.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible. Okay, let's turn to something slightly different, but more a big potential economic impact. Apple is obviously an absolutely massive corporation. And so the benefits that they get hypothetically from any form of tax avoidance or tax cuts can also be potentially quite massive. Now, this week, because of a combination of both the release of the Paradise Papers, which we've reported on earlier this week, and the work of TYT Investigates, we've got some ways that Apple is currently bending the rules to save themselves absolutely tremendous amounts of money without those savings apparently ever being passed on to either America in general or to people like you in particular. Some might call this a con job. There was supposed to be a thing there. Man, I didn't already feel awkward enough doing that transition without the wait. Anyway, and we're good. Okay, so let's jump into this. Now, you might have heard in the news over the past couple of days that Apple got in a lot of trouble because they had been harboring a lot of their money in Ireland, which had much more favorable tax rates. So back in 2014, the European Union investigated Apple's activities a year after the US didn't do too much about it, and ordered them to pay a significant amount of money, $14.5 billion in back taxes. So based on the documents leaked in the Paradise Papers, Apple apparently asked the Bermuda-based law firm Appleby, the core of these papers, what different offshore jurisdictions have to offer. When Ireland changed its tax laws in 2015, the year after those fines, it gave companies operating out of the country, like Apple, the right to continue their arrangements until December 2020. That gave Apple enough time to begin processing the changes in residency of its two biggest subsidiaries that were in Ireland at that time to Jersey, an island. which had eliminated corporate taxes with a few exceptions back in 2008. Wow, that sounds like a great situation there. Now, Apple has said that 70% of its profits come from outside the US, which is plausible. They sell phones all over the place and other things. Yet its foreign tax rate typically falls between 2 to 5%. In the US, it would have been significantly higher until the Republicans get done devastating the US taxes. So in the current situation, they're saving absolutely tons of money. Senator John McCain at one point said that by sheer size and scale, it's among America's largest tax avoiders. And that's, I don't believe, a reputation that they really hold. I mean, generally people have pretty favorable views of this company, other than the fact that there's the obsolescence of their technology as they update it. But that's the current situation. Now we've got this potential tax cut situation coming up. And the proposed tax cuts would reduce the corporate rate on domestic profits to 20%. Now obviously it's higher now, it's 35%, but even under the current situation, their effective tax rate was scarcely higher than it would be with the change. And since the loopholes aren't being taken away, the various forms of tax avoidance aren't being taken away domestically, that is gonna drop even more. Now reduced rates on repatriated earnings, this is earnings abroad that then come back, would be even lower. That's at a 12% rate. And right now, with over $260 billion in cash, the vast majority of it overseas, this tax break would save them $60 billion. And with those sorts of savings potentially coming to them, you might understand why this year alone they've spent $5 million lobbying Congress on taxes. Last year they spent almost as much. This year is not even done yet. And so that is an absolutely huge situation. So we have a little bit more coming out of TYT Investigates.
That's good news first, though, because you know we're all leaving TYT. We're going to get jobs at Apple.
Not after this story, we're not.
They're getting $60 billion just in repatriation money and also other tax cuts that are going to come with this bill that they're going, they're hell bent on pushing through.
Yeah.
Everybody gets six-figure jobs, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, if
they'll pass along the savings to the consumer with your
absolutely.
iPhone.
Yeah. How much do those new phones cost? Yeah. $1,000. They're really good.
I heard the new iPhone 10 with its glitches, and then there's something with the typing thing people have an issue with. It's getting question marks with square around.
Well, you can't put a capital I, I think. But if we can get that corporate tax rate down, I think we can get the I back.
If you can figure it out, you get a job, six figures minimum at Apple. That's what they're promising everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I have nothing against their products. I have an Apple laptop I use here. I have a PC at home that I built, but I have a Mac here. They're perfectly good products.
Well, that's
products.
Why they're the world's most valuable company, because
exactly.
We all have their stuff.
But we do have to make sure that they actually pay their fair share, and I don't know that they're actually doing that. Now, look, in the link down below, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can read the TYT Investigates article about this, which has ton of details. It's very well put together, and even in that story, they acknowledge that Apple is steadily growing in terms of how many employees it has, which is perfectly fine, and it will continue to invest domestically and abroad if there's demand for it. But the problem is that in this lobbying and in the conversations we always have about corporations and their potential activities in the US, there's always this myth that if we simply shower them with more money, then that will magically create jobs. But anyone who's been through even a high school level economics class knows that that's not the way it works. And that's even if you don't know that major corporations in the US are sitting on huge piles of cash already that they're not investing with. And the reason is that you don't create new jobs just because you got money burning a hole in your pocket. You do it when creating the jobs is necessary to sell more of your products that there is a demand for. The extra money that we shower on you has absolutely nothing to do with it. And companies like Apple and companies that are even worse in some aspects, they want you to believe these myths that if only we enrich them, they will enrich us in turn. The second part never happens, but the first cyclically does in US history, constantly.
I mean, they're nice guys, they love America. So then they'll give it right back in many different ways, obviously. Again, it has to be based in only going for your side. Like that's if they keep lying to us and telling people, hey, how about the massive number of jobs that you got the last time this happened, but then complain about job numbers and unemployment rates, and look at this welfare system, and look at you people want your handouts. Which one is it?
Yeah.
Is it being showered amongst everybody for the past 20 years? Or has it been so horrible every time only when Clinton and Obama were in office? Which one is it? It can't be both, but you can go with this lack of logic as long as your team is winning.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the word handouts. God, these are corporate handouts. This is corporate welfare that is being instituted in the United States of America. And Tim Cook, who, you know, is the CEO of Apple, he met with Trump as soon as he became president. He started right away lobbying. I mean, these guys are concerned with their bottom line. And John so perfectly described, these companies only care about the bottom line. They're not in the business of employing people unless it helps their bottom line. Yeah. So this is absolute corporate welfare, and they're about to, I mean, really blow the fence open on corporate welfare if this tax cut goes through.
Definitely, yeah, one of their biggest priorities. We're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we're actually gonna continue on with this. We're gonna update you on the current battle over this potential tax plan, now with details coming out of the Senate. And hopefully, if there's time, there is an environmental disaster going on that we wanna update you on. Some of these photos are absolutely insane, so you're not gonna wanna go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few. Welcome back to the Young Turks, Mark, JR, and John. A few tweets to get to before the last bit of news. Jess, it's just me, in reference to the China story we talked about, says, when did Trump become China's bitch? Asking for a friend. It was 24 hours ago, apparently, around then. Let's see. Matthew says, Apple will not create any new jobs with the tax cuts. All of the money will go straight into the pockets of shareholders, which is mostly the wealthiest 1%. And as I was saying during the break, I might have to invest in Apple. Because they're probably going to get these tax cuts. They're probably going to make a lot of money. Plus, you know, their laptops are good. Anyway, okay, why don't we, oh, I just forgot. And I don't want to forget.
Members?
We acknowledge, yes, two of the members. Christian Kantos and Sharon Decker, thank you for being members of TYT. I wish I knew what your numbers were, but for some reason it's not in there anymore. But thank you either way.
By the way, just on the China thing, his tweet made me think of it. I know, I'll keep it quick. They're playing him, of course, perfectly, right? They just lay out everything. They treated him like no dignitary has ever been treated on a Chinese visit.
Yeah.
And he's gone to the Forbidden City and been feted there. Never before has that happened. They're playing Trump perfectly, and as a result, he rolls over and, you know.
Yeah. There was stories, I think it was his first foreign trip, and they said many countries studied up on him and asked people what type of person he is, what type of mentality he has, so they could do things a certain way and butter him up, yeah. And you'll get anything you want from this guy. It's like, it's just psychological tests. You're like, oh, this is easy.
You don't need a deep scouting report on Donald Trump, though. It's pretty clear how to play him, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump back on the news. Although the bill isn't currently public, we are getting some idea today of what the Senate Republican tax bill might actually include and how it might be different from the House version. We've been breaking down all of the components and the consequences if that House version does become law. Let's find out about the Senate version. More generally first, though, Gary Cohn had an interesting revelatory moment in the media. We're gonna get to that in 1 second. First though, let's jump back to late September of this year, where he's being asked about this tax bill and what it is likely to include and what effects it's likely to have or not have.
Wealthy Americans are not getting a tax cut. We have designed a tax plan that is stimulus for the economy, where we are giving tax cuts to middle and lower income Americans. We want everyday hardworking Americans.
Will the wealthy get a tax cut or not?
The wealthy are not getting a tax cut under our plan.
So they're not getting a tax cut under the plan. Then the plan comes out, they're getting almost all the tax cut under the plan. And so let's find out how he responds to reality.
You're not saying, as you did a few weeks ago, that the wealthy do not get a tax cut under your plan?
I'm saying there's unique situations to everyone out there. Everyone has their own story. It's not our intention to give the wealthy a tax cut.
But they are getting one.
I don't believe that we're set out to create a tax cut for the wealthy. If someone's getting a tax cut, I'm not upset that they're getting a tax cut.
I'm just upset that you know that they're getting a tax cut. I'm really upset about that.
What a clever little bit of wriggling away he did, though. Well, with the, it wasn't our intention, right? What a great thing. Once you said it wasn't our intention, you can say anything.
Yeah.
Because you're not even talking it's about jiu-jitsu. The legislation anymore.
Yeah, right. It's like, did you cheat on me? No. Okay, yes. But everyone has a story about the way that I'm cheating on you. It's really interesting, and I'm not mad about it.
It wasn't my intention to cheat on you, but damn, she was hot. So then once it happened, I was like, I didn't mean for it to happen, but I'm not upset that it happened. I mean,
did you cheat on me? It wasn't my intention.
Yeah, and so it's very clear, obviously, if you've been paying attention to this, the American public generally knows that this is designed to enrich individuals. It's in particular designed to enrich large corporations, perhaps even more than wealthy individuals, although it's good for them as well. But let's turn now to some of what we're finding out about the Senate version of the bill. So Senator Bill Cassidy said that, that while the House version of the bill drastically slashes the corporate tax rate, like almost in half basically, just huge cuts that they would have never dreamed they could have had a few years ago, starting next year, they're going to have it start the year after. And there's a couple of reasons that they might be wanting to do that. I mean, one might be that that will moderate how much it adds to the deficit in the short term. That can make it look not as bad. But perhaps more importantly, 2019 is after 2018. And 2018 is notable for some reason. And after Tuesday, they're terrified. And so maybe that might be one reason that they're modifying it. Also said that the individual mandate will not be repealed as part of the Senate tax overhaul proposal. I love how just those random, seemingly unrelated things, like, wait, was that on the table? Why are you including that there? Oh, we're not going to be drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge as part of this tax plan. Well, thank you.
Well, the thing is, and after the individual mandate is a part of a plan to repeal, they're going to say, well, it wasn't our intention to repeal the individual mandate. But I mean, everything has a different kind of circumstance. Each person has a different healthcare need. But we repealed it because we didn't mean to. But I'm not mad that we did.
You're not mad? No. Okay. Let's see. Oh my God. So I came across this morning. And so we've been talking about some of the deductions they get rid of in the plan. And some of them are just so spiteful. Like taking away, like if you move for a job, you could have deducted some of that. They want to take that away from you. If you pay interest on student loans, which everybody has, basically, they're taking away that deduction. Then there was also, like from the pro-life party, they were taking away the deduction if you adopt a child. And so Democrats proposed an amendment to restore that adoption tax credit. And in return, to even things out, the corporate tax rate wouldn't have dropped to 20%. It would have dropped to 20.04%. And the Republicans were like, go to hell. And they voted against it. They were quoted as saying, you can kiss 0.04% of my ass. That's how much they're willing to screw over people who are adopting. They're flipping off orphans for 0.04%.
Think about the amount of money. 30, it went 35 to 20 because that's huge. It's great. Oh my God, goodness. And this is 0.04.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's 0.04%. So what is, but for a second, let's just think about that. What was behind that? Was that pure partisanship? Why would you not be for granting that tax credit to families that are adopting children? I mean, it's, and as John says, you know, it's such a small percentage. I mean, it's a minuscule percentage. What's going on there? Is that pure party politics?
Could just be arrogance. They believe that they don't need it.
God, it's just.
If they think they can get it through, why not get everything?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe they're wagering that if they can't get everything they want right now, maybe wait. I can't imagine that they think they're going to get more seats next year. I don't know.
They work for corporations. Corporations worry about every penny. No. If you don't pay a bill down to its last penny, they're going to come for you because it's a machine. It's just a calculator. So they work for a machine of calculating the extreme amounts of money they can possibly get. So they go down to that much. That 0.04% is a lot because we work for a machine.
Yeah.
They do.
They do. Okay, we're going to go through this really fast because I really want to get to the story and we're going to try not to go over too much. Over the past week, the Indian capital of Delhi has been blanketed by smog that is so toxic, I'm not joking, they literally have had to remake the charts that measure environmental pollution in the air because previously it wouldn't have fit on the chart. The president of the Indian Medical Association called the pollution they're experiencing a public health emergency and warned residents to rest, quote, completely, meaning no walking or going outside in a gigantic city like that, citing concerns for asthma attacks, lung and heart damage, and sudden cardiac arrest from breathing the air they're experiencing it right now. Delhi's chief minister called the city a gas chamber. And we're going to show you some more pictures, obviously, but to give you an idea of what they're experiencing here, the air quality index was over 999, which doesn't mean anything by itself, but understand that it's 30 times the safe limit set by the WHO, 10 times worse than Beijing, which makes news 5 or 6 times a year for how dark and toxic the air is there. And look at that, planes couldn't take off at various points because the air was so thick you couldn't see to take off. Now they expect that in a few days this might go away, and understand that the reason it's happening is a combination of various like burning, like off excess crops, things like that. There's a lot of reasons, but obviously pollution by itself is a constant problem. It's not necessarily this bad all the time, but it is a big deal. And earlier this year, we reported on new data showing that air pollution can be traced to 9 million premature deaths every single year around the world. It's not always as noticeable as that, but it kills literally millions.
Yeah, I mean it's been shown in recent studies to actually cause Alzheimer's, a premature onset of Alzheimer's, and so it affects even first world countries. That's an extreme example of it, but it's and by the way, it's coincidental that Trump should be in China because, you know, China has these same problems, and and they have problems not quite as bad as New Delhi, but you'll see all those pictures of people walking around in China with the masks on, and that's because the air is that. Yeah. That bad. Yeah. This is our future, in my view, particularly with the kind of policies that are being implemented by this administration. Take off the restrictions. I call them protections. You can call them restrictions. The regulations against polluting the air and the water, and this is our future. Yeah. It's scary.
You think it's in a whole different world. So whenever there's natural disasters, or we had the wildfires that. That swept through, it was Northern California, a lot of.
Yeah.
And the pictures you saw there, it looked third world, looked like a video game, looked like some kind of disaster movie. And then that's when people decided to look up and go, oh my God, how could this happen? But there's not a fire that was burning right around that city center. It's not like it was something that came right over the top and you can track it back to one thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It looks like a horror movie. Look at those birds flying.
That's crazy.
And then you're wondering, it looks like, what is it? From The Lorax. When he found a blue piece of the sky and picked his ass up and sent himself out.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a sandstorm. That is literally just the air. And understand, we're broadcasting right now from LA, a place that had its own smog problems. And the smog didn't go away just by chance. It didn't go away because of thoughts and prayers. It went away because we instituted new environmental protections.
And they worked.
And they worked. They worked there. They worked with the hole in the ozone layer, which is at its smallest level ever recorded since we destroyed it. It worked with acid rain largely. Like, this is something that we can institute to stop general forms of air pollution and also to try to restrict the amount of carbon we're putting into the environment. And I share your concern over the direction of the EPA. It's not just in climate change where they're likely to screw us over in any number of ways, but in generalized air pollution as well, which won't take a long time to do damage. It can start killing you right now. And when they're taking away rules, trying to tamp down how much methane is being emitted into the atmosphere, when they're getting rid of the rules, stopping people from just dumping all sorts of toxic sludge into rivers and streams, like, these are the things that we know that they're doing. God only knows what else they're doing. And I don't want the US to ever look like that. I don't want Delhi to look like that either. But I certainly don't want the US to look like that. And these are the people that are controlling the EPA and the federal government now.
Right. We can't control those making decisions in Delhi, but we can control those making decisions here.
Exactly.
Good thing we're still part of the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah.
Oh, this just in.
We don't want to join it now because Syria's in it. I don't want to hang out with those people. a little dark humor from JR. Anyway, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you to Mark and JR. It was good having you on once a year. We'll see you in 2018, buddy.
Yeah.
You'll be sitting in the middle. Anyway, lots to get to in the second hour of The Young Turks, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few.